Before we begin today's podcast, I'd just like to thank our very special sponsor, brand new sponsor, Shadow Boxer.
Hey, Shadow Boxer, a venture studio out of Cremorne, Melbourne, who build, launch and invest in disruptive technology businesses. Their venture studio model is designed to help founders and early stage innovators realize their greatest ambitions at speed with a specialized team, flexible creative capital and a trusted network of investors.
That sounded like you read that off LinkedIn.
I may have, but that's okay. If you haven't seen them already, you've been living under a rock. They've been making waves in the headlines, making news, making a splash. And here they are now sponsoring Funny Business for the next few months. So we're excited to have them here and enjoy the next episode. Hello and welcome to Funny Business. I'm Rob and Locke's over there and I'm going to go jump straight in because we had Hamish McKay.
Is it McKay? McKay? How do you say that?
I'm going to go with
McKay. Kiwi.
He's Kiwi.
With a Kiwi accent.
I don't know how to do it.
Yeah, you
accent.
Thought about it. I saw your eyes.
I tried to think about it.
How do they speak?
I was going to go straight into Scottish.
Hamish McKay, mate.
I don't know. Say dick, not deck. That's about all
Fish
I've got.
Fish and chips, mate. Fish and chips.
Yeah, anyway. This is an unreal chat. We talk about it in the episode, but we got to go on a bit of lunch date that you set up at Don's in the city, which is my favourite place to eat in the world. You know, I got to have a chicken curry.
Rumor has it you got the back corner. You had the flowers in front of you, so no one could see you.
We lit some candles.
Was it very intimate?
We had a very good time, and I feel like after you listen to this chat, you'll understand why I had a nice time. He's an unreal dude doing amazing things. 22 years old, making shit happen. Yeah, we're not. It's all good.
I saw a lot of you in him, to be honest. The way he was talking, he's way smarter than you. But just like how he thinks about things. He's just like a better version of you, I reckon.
All right. Anyway, enjoy the chat. See you next time. Hamish, thank you so much for jumping on the Funny Business Pod. For those at home listening, tell us who are you and what do you do?
Yeah, g'day. It's bloody good to be here. I am a founder of a new startup called Order Editing. We work with Shopify brands. We're a Shopify app that is delivering a far better experience to consumers and also your customer service teams. And the really exciting thing about this is that our product just has not existed before. We launched in a market with no competition, which is pretty rare for a Shopify app, you know, in 2024 when the space has been around for 10, 15 years.
Before we get into all that good stuff, I've just been getting called Hitch lately over the last like week or two because it's just been like, setting you guys up on a lunch date at Don Don's. I know I couldn't make it, so I'm sorry about that. But we caught up maybe a few days beforehand and then Rob met up with you for lunch. And it was funny because after the lunch, Rob just texted me going, had a great time. He's a bloody legend, blah, blah. And then I went to message you saying, you know, Rob said he had a good time. And then you sent me a message saying, oh my God, Rob's the best bloke, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, what's going on here? I feel like I'm the chief facilitator, aren't I? You had a good time?
I had a bloody good time. I love startups fair, and you guys are right within it. Like, and I love Don Don's, the new recommendation. I'm taking all the future dates, all the everything there. It's a banger.
Well, mate, and you're a lot taller in real life. It's one of those things that like people, it's hard to comprehend because I'm not that tall.
Well, you're 5 foot four.
When I walk into people that are really tall, it's like, fuck, you've got a bit of height, bro. You know what I mean?
A presence.
Yeah, I'm the shortest in my family as well. Like, I'm the shortest of my family by about 2 or 3 inches, aside from mum, obviously, but I'm like the runt of the litter.
House of Giants.
House of Giants.
Well, mate, take us back. You're a young dude making some stuff happen. How did this interest in the world of startups and let alone like being at school, is this something that you thought you'd, the pathway that you go down and things that you want to be doing?
Yeah. And in high school, I always wanted to be a professional athlete. Like I was rowing competitively. And I think that set up a little good foundational work for the journey that I'm now on. But I ended up dropping out of high school slightly early to head down to uni because I was just kind of getting really into my education. And I wasn't picking up a lot of it at high school. My last year was a bit of like a muck around. So I jumped down to university and with this like professional athlete approach, but quickly fell in love with business, which is something I'd never studied before. And I quickly dropped the rowing, like dived headfirst into my studies. And at the exact same time, I started keying into people that were talking about financial literacy. There's a guy called Luke Kemmies back in New Zealand. And I'd get this weekly newsletter from him around how you can build wealth and effect and how quickly you can make that happen. Like this idea of why do people earn different incomes? You know, some people earn drastically higher incomes, but we all retire at the same age. Like, how does that make any sense? And it's this idea of you inflate your lifestyle and everyone just ends up chasing a different thing, but you still end up working through to when you're 60. And I always felt like I just don't want that. I want to stand in the shoes of someone who has wealth and experience it like as early as possible in a perfect world, and then be able to go on this journey of, okay, here are the options of how I spend my time, and I can actually decide on that and not be at all financially incentivized. Because right now, like, I would apply for jobs based on salary or based on like future projection, or, you know, if you didn't reach some, and I'm not there yet, obviously, but if you didn't reach this level of financial freedom, like, that does determine your lifestyle a lot. And so at university, realizing this, I was like, well, the only way I'm going to achieve wealth and do that early is by starting a business. You just can't get there in an accelerated way working full time. Maybe doctors can. I'm not sure. I've never earned a doctor's salary, but that's really where this idea of, okay, I need to start a business and I want to do that fast. What's the best way to do that? And it's to go work at startups, to go shadow a founder, to try and grab as much mentorship as you can and just like soak up like a bloody sponge, so that when you do have this idea and you go to market, that you've seen how people execute before. Because, like, obviously I'm 22 years old, this is my first time doing it, how the hell am I supposed to know what to do? But I do have a lot of ideas, and I've pulled on the best things that I've seen from podcasts or from founders that I've worked with or from mentors or from friends that are doing the exact same thing. And I think, like, that's how right now we're actually succeeding, and we wouldn't have been able to do that otherwise.
Well, Locke called himself Hitch, but one of the reasons why I felt like we left that lunch, and I definitely felt energized after catching up with you, mate, was just more like, I like how you think, and I feel like a lot of our thinking aligns in that space of, like, there's a reason why people are attracted to the world of startups, and there's a reason why people are trying to change their lives and do things differently. And I think there's people fall into maybe like two categories. One, it's like they want to work forever and they want to go and build unicorn startups and be involved in these other things and like fill their diary up with this other stuff. And there's also the people who, which I think we're aligned on, is like, it'd be really cool to be able to make some cool stuff happen and then have the freedom to go and live your life how you want to live your life. And Locke and I always talk about it, like,
yeah,
if we got lucky in one of these times and something happened,
I'd still be doing the podcast. I don't know about you, Rob, but I'd be daily, just because I need people to listen to what
I would be absolutely gone. I'd be invisible. I'd be disappeared. You'd never find me again. And I think that's a weird thing. Like, I feel like, obviously, growing up over in NZ, I'm not sure how different it was, but for us here, like, that whole go to work, go to school, go to uni, get a job, fit into the societal bubble of what's expected, and that sort of stuff. It's like, it's for us, diving into the world of startups sort of opened up a new pathway for us. And we're a bit older coming into it versus what you're doing now. But I feel like it really opened my eyes into what's possible out there. And you hear these stories, which seem really far-fetched at the time. And then for us, we now get to meet all these people through doing the podge, and like, fuck, they're just normal people who've just done some stuff and made some things happen. Is that your experience in the world of startups?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, I laugh because when I was in high school, I was super into my English. Like, that's what I was good at, was writing and reading and writing essays. Great skill to have. And I remember saying to my dad, who's a lawyer, and being like, look, I really want to be a lawyer when I go to uni. He goes, mate, that is not you. Because he's like, you're a wheeler dealer. Like, you're getting out there, you're crushing. Like, you're not going to enjoy reviewing legal papers. Like, you're not going to enjoy the work I do. I find it energizing, but this is not you, just FYI. So he like diverted me from, you know, that probably more traditional corporate career, and almost got the wheels turning of like, you need to have a bit of a different approach when you're young because you're not going to fit in. And then like the New Zealand versus Australia experience has definitely been different for me. I don't know if that's because of the friend groups I chose, but like my lifestyle in New Zealand at uni was like, we're all so confused and we're just trying to figure out what to do. And you're kind of having a good time, a really good time, and there's little kind of planning around the future. I think my friends thought I was a bit crazy for being so like, I'd write stuff down and then like I knew where I was going to be in 4 years or whatever it was. That was definitely quite confrontational. But then I moved to Oz and I jumped into my first startup role, and it was I think there was one person over the age of 25, and this was a business that in 2 years was doing $40 million of revenue. And it was just a team of like internet kids that were really specialized, highly skilled at design and the creator economy and building up hype and like growing communities in effect. And it was like, oh my God, you guys are geniuses, like geniuses. I feel like an idiot around you. I need to level up. And I think that was like when I was like, oh my God, I'm gonna stay in Australia while I'm young and upskill, because the difference was just massive in terms of who I was hanging out with. And then lo and behold, this group of 25 something year olds, we all leave this business. I've now started this business where one of the other guys in that team, he's 24, he's just started an alcohol company for the largest YouTube channel in Australia, or the second largest YouTube channel in Australia. Two of the guys have just started off a casino, an online casino for cryptocurrency to try and compete with Stake. One of the girls has launched her own independent fashion label that is like selling out every single month when she does these drops. Everyone's wearing it at Pitch. It's freaking energizing. And that has just been like surreal for me to come up with those guys on that journey, because I used to be an idiot, pretty much, you know.
I think like being young and ambitious and having that energy is a superpower, because I feel like when you're around people like that, like we feel it through the pod, just meeting people like yourself all the time. It's like it gives us energy. And I think it's super special when you grow up and rise with people. Like we see it with our friends who are doing some cool stuff as well. It's just like you're happy for everyone and you're just like, fuck, it almost feels like a school without being a school. It's like, oh, we like the X-Men or something like that. Like you come from this like community of people and you're just like, oh, it's fun to look back on, because I feel like lots of stuff it's lonely building shit, but when you're seeing other people in different things, it feels more like a team, like the Ryder Cup with golf, you know,
Like the ripple effect, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think like a lot of people have this idea of what are like the two, three things that are really critical in a person for them to like be a winner and like you want to work with them. And it's a really hard thing to define, but I've found like personally what I've found, like previous bosses, mentors, they all say like you've got energy and intellect, and those are like two things that can't really be taught and are super valuable. And they were like, when you go to hire people, like try and search for those qualities, because everyone can upskill in certain areas, but energy like can't be taught, and you need energy to scrap around and do these crazy things that people we know and you know are doing. And like I had never thought of that, but when I think about Kara, my co-founder, when I think about Dave, who we've just hired, when I think about the conversations that I have like with you guys, I think those two qualities are a really common trend. I'm not sure what you see in the people you've interviewed, like this common thread of that describes you. I think that's what makes you successful, but I guess everyone has their different things.
Oh, I think resilience is a big thing, and I feel like if you can be around people who can give you that positive energy and optimism when things seem really fucking hard and challenging, I feel like that's key.
I was gonna say something simple we say all the time, like things happen when you do stuff, which sounds really simple
Very simple.
and like, but it's like when people ask, oh, how do you make that happen, or how do you, it's like you just do stuff. Good, some stuff is good, some stuff is bad, but the more stuff you do, the more chance of some positive
Put
outcomes
in the
happening. It's
work,
like,
you know.
but sometimes people don't want to hear that. I'm sure like you've got friends or things or who've now finished uni or gone to get a job, and they're asking like, how are you doing what you're doing? And your response is like, I just started doing stuff, you know?
Yeah, it's like it's something that I get. You get asked that, and I've really wanted to like build some content around that. And I did this presentation to some uni students yesterday, like a guest lecture, and I had this like slide at the end after I went through all these learnings and these lessons, and I said like it's not that complicated. You just need to figure out how are we, like your business, so specific to you, how are we going to win customers? How are we going to become best friends with them and delight them? Because that's where you can learn how to build a better product, obviously reduce any risk of churn. And then it's like, how do you do everything in a way that scales? Because if you just keep hiring people as your revenue grows, you're not getting any more profitable. And then it's how can we make this really bloody hard for competition, either to enter or to beat us out if you're already like in a market with them. And like that's the crux of your business. Like figure out what your levers are that you're going to pull and how you're going to tick those boxes, and you'll be fine. So long as you actually go out and do it, like you're saying, Robbie.
Well, man, well, let's rewind back a little bit. I know you told us a story the other day over a chicken curry at Don Don's, which is my favorite
Was
place in
there
the world.
curry on the wall? Was it
It
dirty?
was
Still dirty?
dirty. The fan stunk. You could just,
Was the service quick?
it was very quick. How quick was the
Did he order
service?
the extra carrot?
I didn't order the extra curry. I was in a rush.
Oh, in a rush, he was rushing
I
you.
was no, I was too hungry, mate. I was too
Oh.
hungry. But you told us a story about where the idea for order editing came from. Would love to rewind back a little bit and say,
What is it?
what is it, but how did it come about based on the role you were doing at the startup you mentioned at the start?
Yeah, so it was about 2 years ago today where this idea started. I was working for an influencer merchandising company. We were working with your Mr. Beast, your Karl Jacobs, your Tommy Innits, designing, manufacturing, shipping out clothing, and doing the customer service for big fashion and apparel drops. Big in that, like, these 19-year-old Minecraft kids that do YouTube for a living would turn over $5 million in 24 hours or 7 days. Like, it was nuts. And I was running the customer experience team there. And we had this team of outsourced staff in the Philippines, some locals in Australia. And I was 21 at the time. And so I was doing everything I could to figure out how to be a good manager because everyone's 10 years older than me. And so I had these like one-to-one sessions that I did fortnightly. You know, I read management books and I did that thing. And I remember 1 week I asked them all, well, what do you spend the most time doing? And I think it was 8 out of the 10 support agents said I spend the most time changing addresses and changing customer sizes after purchase, like before it ships out. And I was like, that's really interesting because it's a pretty similar process in Shopify as doing a return for a customer, but we don't have to manually do returns. Like there are apps that a customer can log into a portal and return the product themselves without ever contacting your support team. And I just raised it with the team inside. And I said, hey, you know, we spend about 80 hours a month changing customer addresses in Shopify. Do you think like we could try and build a self-service portal for these changes to happen? And I connected up with a developer that I knew through some mutual connections and said, hey, like, would love for you to build this. Like, let's work on this together. And we built an MVP, used it on these stores, and like, genuinely, we went from having 10,000 emails received every single month to 7,000. Like the uplift was insane. We no longer had a queue of tickets to get through. Like we were managing it. Our store grew and grew and grew in size, but we didn't have to hire more staff, this whole like scalability piece. And then we came together at the end of the year and said, okay, we've just built the first ever portal for a customer to make a change to their order after purchase. Like this hasn't existed. Let's go to market with this. We've got great results. Let's build this even better. And then 6 months later, I'm posting on LinkedIn saying, you know, we built the first Shopify app to let customers edit their order after purchase, and it saved us $78,000 last year. And that's been the launch. And then we're just progressively been growing the product, learning how these large fashion retailers work and what we need to build to support them. And just building a really, really frictionless and beautiful product that's solving a problem. Like a genuine, genuine problem. We launched with the Udi right before Black Friday. The Udi are a giant store, like 100,000 orders in 30 days, 60 days. And they have a ludicrous amount of support agents because they receive so many emails. We put this live on their store. They do this massive sale where these tickets really start to come in. And we self-serviced over 4,000 customers in the first month and then 4,000 again in the second month. And 4,000 customers, it's like 6 minutes to solve that query. I don't want to do the math on the top of my head, but we're talking like 40 hours a week of work. We just lifted off their plate. And now we're just trying to gain traction and keep growing.
Oh, it's a big problem because I'm someone who rushes my order when I see something. I'm very impulsive.
He's
So I'm just like,
a panic buyer. He's a panic buyer.
and I'm like, oh, did I get the triple XL, double XL, or the XL?
Oh, he's and it was fine. How do I change my order for my shit wrestling top? You know what I mean? Like that's.
No, but I think like honestly, it's solving a genuine problem. And what is it about like solving problems? Where like you mentioned you uncovered that and you're like, fuck, we just need to do that. Is that something that you've always sort of tried to identify problems in a space to see where the opportunities are?
Yeah. It's funny. Like I was never the ideas guy in high school in terms of like business ideas or at university. I don't have a list of potential businesses that I could have started. this was like legitimately the first time I was like, oh my God, this is an idea we could commercialize. What I always did have though was like strong opinions that were loosely held. Like I would always put up my hand. I would always like try and drive group projects for and suggest ideas that weren't necessarily like business ideas, but just like I would try and think creatively and laterally. And it was why I started working at a startup, was because I knew that to start a business, you need to solve a problem or have these ideas. And the best thing about startups as a young person that's trying to accelerate their career is that you're under-resourced. So you join a team of 10 absolute legends, but they're stretched to their limit. And so there are heaps of holes. And if you can be the guy that goes in, notices that hole because you have this external perspective because you're fresh and plug that hole, like you either plug a hole in a way that starts a business or you're getting a like flipping promotion or you're highly valued or your boss says, hey, mate, like I appreciate you. And you don't get those opportunities as much at larger organizations because there aren't as many holes. And so that was part of the thing behind a startup was like, well, I want to know how to solve problems and what better place to do it than a place that has problems. And lo and behold, like the business started from a problem at a startup that, you know, we noticed.
I love that when you go like headfirst into the hard too. You know, when you're going in and you're doing solving hard things, and it's like for example, in the consultancy days, you know, you're going into a company and you're like, there's big change and stuff like that. But I feel like you get highly skilled when you do stuff, like when you put yourself in them situations as well.
It's a different learning opportunity. I think
Yeah.
that's why you see a lot of now different people, like younger generation coming through, who don't want to go maybe that traditional management consulting path that gives them, I guess, what they were sort of people who want to go work at the Big Four or whatever, that allows them that experience working at different projects and different companies and gathering those different skills like to add to their toolkit. Whereas now people see it's more like, oh, how can I go and maybe build my own toolkit in a different way through learning through experience versus learning through having to make PowerPoint slides and decks to win pieces of work. You know, it's a different way of what's interesting the next generation people coming through. And I feel like last year was maybe pretty interesting where a lot of sort of startup jobs weren't as safe, like not that startup jobs are safe and secure, but we sort of got lucky for 18 months of some different funding and people coming into different things and expecting that they can go and like avoid working in that space. So it's like, do you have a bunch of people in your world who are still like on the edge about whether they should be in the world of startups or not?
Not the people that are in it. The people that are in it have found love it, but it's definitely not for everyone. I find that like most of the people I know that are my age, and this is mostly back in New Zealand, mind you, have the mindset that like, no, I still need to go this path of get my big logo on my CV, my Deloitte on my PwC, and then I can do that type of journey. Like I need that leverage of working at a corporate, and I'm not like, I can't blast a corporate. I've never worked there. Like, I don't know what that experience is like. I'm just like super biased towards startup because that's all I know. It's all I've been doing the last 3 years. And but there's a lot to be said about corporates and like mentorship and development and learning really vital skills and professionalism that carries you super well. And I think that if you can think about startups in an intelligent way and like execute on those job opportunities intentionally, you can get that same type of experience. Like I think I'm quite fortunate in that my first job exposed me to like acceleration and really fast growth and building things and doing it and building a community and audience, which is part of like our strategy for our business. The next startup I worked at though was a software company, and it was run far more rigorously. It was a software company for the chairs of ASX listed boards, and the founder had done this three, four times before. He was a top tier management consultant. He was, you know, had kids, 40 years old, and he was the smartest person in the room always. And so I went there and I actually leveled up a lot. And I kind of got a taste of what I imagine working in a bigger corporate was like, because we did wear a suit and we did have systems and process and we thought deeply. And there were leaders that were teaching me everything they knew, which I hadn't experienced the last one. And so I think if you can think about what you need from your job, it gives you a far better nose for those types of opportunities. Like when I left the last one, I sat in the shoes and I said, I'm 22. I've just been a manager for the last year, but I'm probably terrible because I know nothing. Like, I've never had anyone teach me anything in the job space. I didn't have any mentorship there. So when I started looking at job applications, the first thing I said to the interviewer was, the most important thing for me in my next role is having a mentor. Like, can you give me that? Who is going to be the person that is going to sit above me and just feed me information, take me out for walks, let me digest ideas, talk about our personal life and managing work-life balance? And I'm so lucky to have found that. It was life-changing. And I think if you can think about what those things are that are really important, you'll find yourself feeling more and more lucky.
I think for us, it's like the feedback or recommendations for some people to like dive headfirst into the world of startups. I think it takes certain personalities to want to do that, but it's also not for everyone. So I talked to you and when we obviously hear your story, and it's like you've taken a risk early in your life. You don't have as many responsibilities and other things, baggage attached to like kids or all the other stuff that goes with it. It's like you have the ability to take a bit more risk, whereas other people who might be have gone down a different pathway, have gone and got the big corporate logo on their thing. It's like you don't have to always go head first. You can play around and build your own pathway into doing different stuff. And I feel like there's a bit of pressure attached to what people think or expectations of what it means to be in the startup space, which I find really interesting when you're having conversations with people who don't really understand what it's like. You know, and they feel like it's like almost like this black box. Like if you don't work in this, you got no clue or no visibility what's going on in this world. You hear all these cool stories, but you're like, I don't know how I get into that.
Yeah. And I think like the best work that I ever did was when I was at university and I figured out what I wanted from life. And the way that I speak about startups and the opportunity for me and how I think about job opportunities is completely driven by my personal goals and my ambitions. And for me, like I thought at a young age, okay, my path in life is to hit financial freedom early, go and do my gap year. So like the fun happens after, which I think is different to what some people do. You know, they do the 2 years, go travel, and then they get into like working really deeply, or they do it straight after uni. I wanted to flip that. I want that after. And then, you know, like I said at the start, I always thought that it's going to be such a amazing shoes to stand in to think like, what do I actually want to do now, and have that not be driven by financial incentives. And I've always thought that'd be teaching or mentoring or advising, in whatever capacity that looks like. I've always wanted to be a university lecturer, or maybe it's done through content, or maybe it's through advising startups, or maybe it's through like working as a co-founder again, and you have that with your team. And my God, I still feel like that journey is the right one for me. And I set that goal like 4 years ago, and I don't think that will change, but if it does, that's fine. Like, goals change, all good. But I think there was nothing better for me personally than figuring out what I actually wanted. And hopefully I'm not wrong. We'll find out. But I think like I'm really excited about that personal development journey and like the mental health journey that sits inside that.
What about like making decisions? Like you mentioned, like you're planning out what the next 5 years looks like. How long do you spend on thinking about the future and your goals and stuff like that? Because I feel like some people, including myself, can get bogged down in, I want to do it all, or I don't do it enough. Like I only do the 1 year. I'm very bad at like future goal setting and stuff like that, where I think you're good. I feel like I'm pretty sloppy, but how long do you spend on like making decisions and stuff?
In your 20s, he's at 22. He's going, he knows what he wants in his life and how do you want to play it? Yeah. Locke was wearing leopard pants and hole-proof explorer socks, walking with a big trench coat down this street, the thing with his big earphones in. Just,
who's that rock star?
He's just daydreaming, bro. You're the daydreaming king.
I don't know. I just live in the present, you know, but I feel like...
I think it's that.
But like decision-making and stuff like that, like I feel like you're very like, hey, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. Like, how do you go about it?
Yeah. It's funny. Like a lot of this stems from Atomic Habits. Which like I kind of cringe at saying, but it's a book that I read a while back, and it's one of the few nonfiction books that I continually call on, like in my thinking, especially for decision-making. And it's not related to decision-making. It's about habit building, but the framework of stacking habits applies really well to building an intentional life. And so I set some goals for the end of the year, and I pick like three, and they're very focused. And I think forget about the other crap. I'll get to that later. Like, all I need to do is stack three really healthy habits this year. And then when I get to the end of the year, those be part of who I am. That's my personality now. I no longer have to work hard to do those things. It's just who I am. I identify as that person. And then in 2024, you know, I can set three new goals, three new habits, and I'll just start layering these fantastic attributes to myself. And then, you know, I joke with my brother, I say, man, like, I feel like I'm going to be the sickest dude in 10 years because I'm just like progressively trying to add a few really good qualities on. Like, for example, last year was all about reading books. So I read 52 books last year. And now, like, I'm a reader. I don't have a goal of certain books this year. I just read because it's part of who I am. And this year was all about building closer relationships with my family and my friends and finding a sense of community in my life. So I'm doing the whole run club gig and I'm like actively thinking about how often I catch up with my parents and the quality of those conversations. And that ties into decision-making. I kind of got off topic there. That ties into decision-making in the same way. I set goals for the business or like for my personal life. And I then just think about what is actually achievable and what's going to get me there. And the way that it stacks, like, I can get to things later once this becomes easier. I've found that whenever I try and do 100 things at once, I just collapse. But when I think, okay, like, this quarter, we're going to win 30 brands, we're going to close one subscription via a partner, and we're going to start building international presence in the UK. And it's like, okay, how do I do that? I'm going to pull on these three levers and I'm committed to those. I'm going to pull those levers. If they don't work, like, next quarter, I can review it, whatever. And I find that it becomes really easy to make decisions when you just refine your goals down a little bit and make that list smaller, at least like personally. Mate, I don't know if that answered your question.
No, I remember
reading that. Answers it perfectly.
Atomic Habits and James Clear. I remember when I read that for the first time.
You slept with that book.
I went a bit mad. It's funny that you brought it up because it's one of the ones that I've used as reference for on the pod a lot. As well as we had a...
what are you doing now?
Have you read Hacking Growth by Sean Ellis?
I haven't. It's on the want to read list though.
Which is interesting because this is one of the things that I really... Before doing starting the pod, one of my favorite books that we had was Hacking Growth by Sean Ellis, who built the growth funnel for Dropbox and Eventbrite. And then it was James Clear, Atomic Habits. And I remember doing the exercise of trying to just understand my breakdown of what a normal day looks like for me. So I just did a plus and a minus of what does my day look like from the time I start the day versus the time of the end. And I'm nowhere near an expert of having a structured life, especially now since I've had a kid. Like, my life of, I used to think like, oh, I've got too much TV and stuff in there. Now it's like, I want to numb my fucking brain at the end of the day. And I want to sit in front of the TV for like at least 2 hours at the end of the night, just like, I'm not doing anything. You know what I mean? It's very different. Watch something shit, which I definitely wasn't in the mindset of 7-8 years ago, if that makes sense. But it's funny because even like that book there and then Hacking Growth with Sean Ellis, in terms of like what's possible, how do you make stuff happen? I remember back in 2020, so we're nearly 4 years now since doing the pod, when we first kicked it off, we just reached out to Sean over LinkedIn and said, hey, Sean,
what's cooking, Malibu Cruiser? Do you want to come on the pod? And he's like, yeah, baby, I love funny business. And we're like,
this is the book that I feel like changed my perspective of wanting to get into startups and stuff. And now I'm having a conversation with him.
Crazy.
And we're talking to him on the pod. And then, funny enough, like, I don't know if you remember it. Remember Clubhouse became a thing where everyone was... Locke was the biggest advocate for Clubhouse at the time.
He was just trying to get a presence on a new platform. Sorry for putting it in.
But weirdly enough, we were lucky enough to start hosting some events and running some cross things with Sean Ellis over there, doing a growth hacking room and presenting events with...
I think we convinced him we were bigger than what we were.
But it was like, to me, 100%. But again, it's like, for me, it comes back to the whole startup thing. Like, you just making these goals and seeing what you want to do. For me, that transition of what am I ready, what am I learning about, to like being in the world of startups, I feel like that was like one of those moments, me looking back and reflecting now. It's like, I listened to him as an audio book. I really loved what it was doing. And then when we were running our own thing, it was simple as just reaching out. All of a sudden I'm talking to him and now I'm having a face-to-face conversation with the person. I'm like, fuck, I can't believe I love you a little bit. You know, it's
he was kissing the webcam. It was weird. I was like, Rob, just settle down.
It was just weird. You know, I feel like they're the opportunities where people, like, things happen when you do stuff. Like your example of, let's go and make some stuff happen. Let's take order editing overseas and go in the UK. It's like, we just start actioning things. I expect if we chatted in 3 months' time, you would have already had a few runs on the board.
Yeah, and the crazy, like the craziest thing about life and doing things is that as you do things, more things start to happen. And that's like it just starts compounding, and you're like, oh my God, things just keep happening for me. I'm so lucky, or whatever it is. And it's just because you're actually out there getting after it, and you drop all of these barriers around. Oh, it's quite scary to message Sean Ellis. Like, why would I do that? But after you've got this background of messaging other people, it become like you just do it. And a lot of people actually wouldn't kind of take that opportunity to reach out to their mentor, like someone they admire, and try and get them on the pod or try and meet them for a coffee. And that's really cool. I relate that back to like when I started at this merchandising company and I was a kid and I had like was still at uni and I was working full time. I thought like, oh my God, I'm in a really unique situation right now. I would be an idiot not to post this and to try and like leverage that I'm doing something slightly different because people like to follow things that are different. And that was like my journey of starting to post content. And then after doing that, suddenly like I just continued to be in a unique situation. You know, like I didn't have that job and then go back to what I would describe as like a traditional approach. Like I ended up working at a really exciting new startup and then building a side hustle on the side. I then started living with YouTubers and all these types of things that just started compounding. And it's like, oh wow, like I got thrown into this unique situation, made it happen, and then suddenly I'm just continually in one. Maybe that'll end, I don't know. But it does. It like when you start making shit happen, shit compounds in effect.
Well, even if it's not exactly how you thought in your head and it goes in a slightly different direction, that experience and I think just putting yourself out there and just like heading in a positive direction, I feel like does give you them opportunities. But what about like assessing things when things are coming in and all of a sudden there's multiple doors you can open? How do you go about assessing opportunities and picking the right ones?
Yeah, it comes back to those goals. It's like what and how much time you have on your plate. Like if there are three opportunities on the table and you can only execute on one, that becomes a lot easier because you just think what is most in line with, you know, our specific targets that we set. I'm a huge advocate. Like I've talked about goals so much. We literally have this strategy book for our business. And I stole this from the last business that I worked at. The founder had a strategy book. I thought it was brilliant. And so I wrote out 50 pages back in June about how exactly we're going to get through all of these growth horizons, like the exact plan of attack. And for better or for worse, I think it's for better from what I'm seeing. We have just executed on that strategy. We haven't swayed from that path because what we wrote has seemed to be right. And obviously, you can. But a lot of these decisions that come up, like I wrote about them 4 months ago and how we're going to think about them, and they come in and I assess my thinking today and I compare it to my thinking 6 months ago. And I kind of gel that together and try and like get a 6 month-old Hamish external perspective because that is fresh because you're not in those shoes, and then compare it with this one and assess in that way. The other thing that I talk about recently, and this is just the journey of starting a business. For 6 months, we had no really hard decisions. Like we were just, how do we win brands? How do we win brands? How do we win brands? And then in the last 2 months, we've had like hard decisions come on the table. Do you take funding? What type of investors do you want to be on your cap table? Should we hire this person? Should we hire this other person? All of these kinds of like larger decisions that are outside of just how do we win clients and make them happy? And I caught up with a mentor, the old fat, like the founder of the business that I used to work at. And I said, hey, I've got these decisions on the table. I would really love your help because you've been here before. And the call was so short because he said, look, like the first thing you told me about, that is a two-way door. And this is like quoting Jeff Bezos. He said, you can walk through that one and see if you like it on the other side. And if you don't, you can turn back around and there's no harm done. Like, sure, maybe you dropped £5,000 on the opportunity, but you'd be an idiot not to take that risk. Like, just walk through that door because it's reversible. And then the other one, he was like, look, that's not a two-way door. So that's the one that you should be calling me about and spending time thinking deeply and how this affects your business and the risks and opportunities involved. And we ended up just thinking of like just doing the deeper work on that. Whereas the other one, we just lunged at it. Like I was like, let's capture this. We're a startup. We need to move fast. And so I think making a distinction between what requires the big decision-making process and what doesn't will help us accelerate a lot quicker.
Loving that answer, mate. Question we ask all our guests is a bit of a mental health one. What do you turn to get some energy back in your life?
Yeah, I turn to people. One of the really interesting things about my life right now and for the last couple of years has been I just really struggle to switch off from work. Like I'll go to bed and if I'm by myself, I find myself still checking my email, which is terrible. It's a habit that I should kick, but I suck. And so when you're kind of like working act like somewhat like mid-actively from the morning right through to the evening, friends, family, acquaintances, whoever that you can spend time with and like shut off, like you don't even think about your phone. Oh my God, the most energizing thing ever. I love those people to bits. And so I just like latch onto them and I'm go like I make plans with them after work because I know that I'll just have this respite from my phone and my email and I'll be like a healthy, normal human being again, which is frankly like quite challenging to do when you're in this high stress, everything might collapse at any moment type of environment. The other thing that I like call on a lot outside of what energizes me is how I like know how I'm tracking from a mental health perspective. And before I launched this thing, I started going to therapy because I was like, oh my God, my life's about to change. I should put the cart in front of the horse and get help, like stay healthy before I get sick. And we talked a lot about like recognizing when life starts to collapse a little bit. And for me personally, that's around my day-to-day routine. And I literally had this experience last week where I started overworking and heading towards burnout, which is what I'm trying to avoid. And I recognized that happening because I stopped going to the gym. I stopped exercising. Like I got outside for a run like once that week when usually it's 5 times a week or 6 times a week. And like before you know it, I have a week like that and I'm out on the weekend like going too hard for something that I shouldn't, like that's not that exciting. Like it wasn't worth that physical expenditure. And I immediately like wrapped up that week and I was like, man, like that was an average as week. What happened? And I said, oh, like I stayed in the office instead of working out. And then suddenly you've lost this routine and then you do stuff that you don't usually do. You act out. And so I try and keep a real check on like, am I becoming a different person? Is my lifestyle coming a bit different? Because I know that if I am consistent, then like I don't act out, like I'm acting in the way that I should be and like what makes me happy, if that makes sense.
Oh my God, I want you to come around and sort my life out, to be honest. Because I'm listening to you and I'm like, I'm so broken, structured. Dude, and I feel like that's why I surround myself with people like that, because I lack that. You know, I feel it's so important to getting stuff done and to the preparation, I think, is a big one. I feel like you're so prepared. Like you're thinking about things.
Disciplined.
Yeah.
I think discipline's a big skill, especially like to hold yourself accountable in this space. Like, especially running startups, there's no one else to. If you're in another place, you've got someone else telling you what to do, and usually, like, hey, if it's not done, you get in trouble. You know what I mean? Like, whereas when you're doing your own thing, the only person you're accountable is to yourself. And I feel like that's the thing. Like, people who, even if they're on a fitness journey or whatever, it's like not everyone can get to that. Oh, I'm going to be the most ripped person in the world because they don't have the discipline to do that. Like, it sounds good in theory, but I don't want to go to the gym 6 times a week. You know, it's a weird thing to find balance for.
Yeah. I don't know where it comes from. Like I think about rowing in high school, like that's pretty grueling training load. But I've just always been, I don't know if it's like, it's probably like from my parents or your family. I mean, that's what, like, you know, that supreme shit where it's like your parents don't F you up. Like your parents don't mean to F you up, but they do. Like, it's like something like that. Like your parents shape you heaps. And I don't know, but like throughout growing up, I've always set goals. I've always tried to like stick out like a sore thumb and like just felt like I had a lot of potential and it would be a waste not to to capture that. One of the things that I think has served me so well in life, and I don't know where this started, but like from a, like, I think like, I don't know, I just have this constant sense of security that everything's going to be okay. Like that you're going to do well, like you're all good, buddy. Like you can figure out problems. Anything that comes at you is just like not that scary. Just work through it. And like, not to say that I don't get social anxiety and all these things, like I get anxious, but about like who and where and what I'm going to be doing in 30, 40, 50 years, like I don't have this existential crisis of, like, is it going to be all good? Like, I just feel like, you're going to be fine. Everyone around you is fine. You're going to be one of those people. And like, I find that puts me to sleep at night and like gets me up in the morning energized. It's like, you're going to smash it.
Having faith and confidence, I think, is important, and how you talk to yourself as well. Like, I feel like high achievers can be quite strict on themselves around like, fuck, I need to get this done. If I don't, like, I'm a piece of shit. Like, I said I would do it. Like, I feel like I give, yeah. I feel like for me, I give myself a lot of leeway. I give myself a lot of slack. But I mean, there's benefits and cons to that as well. But I feel like, how about you? Like, your relationship with yourself, the self-talk and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, it used to be so, so, so poor. And I used to go through these, like, I used to go through these fluctuating waves of being hyper-productive for 3 months and then an absolute asshole for a month. Even that's like self-critical. Like, you weren't actually an asshole. No one would describe you as that. But like, it was a drastic change in energy and personality probably as well. And just like workload and productivity. But just like slacking out massively. And I did heaps of work in therapy around like that voice inside your head and just thinking, like, I think like, oh, you're a piece of shit tonight for doing whatever, or you didn't go to the gym. And it's like, how would your friend describe you? Like, what would your mom say about it? And it's like, it's not that brutal. It's like, all good, dude, go there tomorrow. Don't beat yourself up over it. No one's going to call you an asshole for like something like that or whatever it is. And I have managed like managed through a lot of, like, it's almost been a year now of work there and like personal work of reading books and journaling and all these types of things to just be a bit kinder and more consistent. And the habit stacking kind of fits into that as well. I think it's not like I immediately started working out a whole bunch. It's like I started with two and I got really good at going twice and then I added on another one, or just that kind of thinking in like every single area of life. Like, I feel like I've found a way of getting better that works for me. And now I just like live by that. And I had this yarn with my brother about it. You know, he was dealing with some like troubles, and I told him like, this is how I approach getting better and all these types of things and my mental health. That's my approach. There's a whole bunch of other options on the table. Like, figure out what works for you. And I'm lucky that I've managed to figure that out relatively young, but there are a whole bunch of different options there. Like, there's no silver bullet to being healthy and having a good mental state, but that's like what works for me.
I think when you see success too, and when you are harsh on yourself and you're ticking goals and there are in the green, I feel like I don't want to lose that. You know, I don't want to lose. I still want to succeed. And I feel like sometimes success can be hard for some people because it's like, you might be doing damaging behavior to yourself, but you just don't know because you keep having the wins.
Yeah. One of the things that I need to get a lot better at is I joke, and I may have even said it at Don Don's, but I joke and say, man, I'm so pissed that I came up with this idea and have this business when I'm young. Like, I just don't have all of the skills that I'd like to. Like, I know that we could probably do better because if I had 10 years of experience behind me, like, maybe we'd be executing better or faster. And whenever I say that to someone who's older, they go, dude, like, you're going to have another shot. Even if this messes out, like, you're going to have another crack. Like, you're in the best position right now. Like, it can go however it wants. You're going to have all that experience and then you can do it again. And I think that's me just being like lacking confidence, really, that I could do this multiple times over. But I think that's progressively building as I realize like what we've achieved in a short period of time and like where this is going. And that, like, at the end of the day, it is me and my co-founder driving this. And that's like the coolest thing ever. I remember like when I quit my full-time job and went full-time on the side hustle, like auto editing, it was the start of this year. And the thing that I was most anxious about was not having a full day's work, of like not being busy. And I remember going into the office and like the first week was just full tit. And I said to Kara, my co-founder, and I said, holy dooly, mate, we're so busy and we created this. Like, this is all us. Like, all of this busyness, all of this work on our plate, like, we made that happen. And I think that's really like awesome.
Well, mate, it's been unreal to chat to you today. If people want to get in touch and learn more about auto editing or get in touch with yourself, how do they find you?
Yeah, connect with me on LinkedIn. I post a lot on there. Username's just Hamish Mackay. That's my name. Otherwise, email me, hamish@autoediting.com. I would drop my phone number, but I also wouldn't. But reach out. Like, I love connecting with people in startup land, entrepreneurs, founders, and I don't get to do enough of it in Australia. I'd love to chat to anyone who found this interesting.
Well, mate, thanks for coming on. I appreciate you spending the time with us.
Cheers, boys.
Hamish McKay, eh? He's a good bloke,
eh? Is that what you're going
go
with?
Go on, you do it.
Hamish McKay, eh? I just copied what you said. Well, hey, if you're new to Funny Business or if you've been here for a while and you haven't shared this episode yet with a friend, hit that share button. Goes a long way to helping us grow the show. Too,
because we don't even know. What do you mean? Tell us if you share it with a friend, tell us that you did.
You want them to do two things. Share it and then tell you.
Yeah, you got to prove it.
Prove it.
Prove it. Otherwise, I don't know. We can't thank you personally. But it's been a good episode. Thank you, Hamish McKay. You've been awesome.